TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Welcome in, Raised by Wolves. Danny Cunningham, Dane Moore, coming after a loss to the Memphis Grizzlies on the road that I don't know that I necessarily expected, Dane.
I told you right before this, man. You got to always expect the unexpected with the Minnesota Timberwolves.
One of the things that I don't think a lot of people did expect this year was actual improvement from Andrew Wiggins, because so many people had written him off, and understandably so. But
what?
I do think I think it's understandable, Dane.
No, I thought I was talking about the written him off thing.
But he's been better, and he's starting to string together a not a significant chunk of games, but there's reason for optimism surrounding him now. And I think he is trying his very best to make the adjustments into this new system that the Wolves are running on offense. And he's doing a solid job of it. And I know that I've been one to tweet out his shot chart rather frequently after games. And it looks a way close to at least what I think an ideal shot chart for him looks like. And he's making improvements.
I think if we were not scarred by previous experiences, you would be using a different adjective than solid. It's been good.
Yeah.
I mean, wipe the number and the name off the back of that jersey. That's a good basketball player, particularly, I think, in the last few games. I tweeted it out after the game and was just talking about it on my podcast. I think it's going to get buried a little bit in two losses to Milwaukee and to Memphis, but I don't remember back-to-back games that I left feeling better about who and what Andrew Wiggins is as a basketball player ever in his career. I think it's and then I don't even know exactly what the aggregated numbers of those two games are. It's more of the shots he's looking for. It's the way he's carrying himself. And it's that at no point in either of the last two games are I going, well, is Andrew actively hurting this team? Like, no, he was definitely a player moving the needle in a positive direction.
I mean, last night he was the best player that the Wolves had. Carl did not look like himself. I realize Carl had 25-13, and like you'll take those numbers from anyone any night you can get them.
Sure.
But he didn't feel like he had the same impact that he had had in previous games.
Why do you think that was?
I don't know. I think maybe because he missed 8 threes, because he was 3 of 11 from deep. Yeah. Maybe that's it. Maybe because it seemed like he did struggle in defending Jonas Valanciunas. Not that they really put an emphasis on him on the offensive end for the Grizzlies, but I think that Valanciunas did not whatever he wanted, but it wasn't that difficult for him against Carl. And I think part of it was rust. Like, he missed the last week, and that's understandable. I don't think it's going to be something that keeps moving forward for Carl. Like, I don't expect this tomorrow night against Golden State. It's kind of a hiccup, and even if that's his hiccup, that's a pretty good hiccup.
It was weird. It felt like a little bit of an overcorrection to me, as we know what Kat said after the Philadelphia game, as we got away from the system that we were playing in Philadelphia. That's why they fell back by 20 before he got in a fight.
And that's what they said about the game against Milwaukee, too.
That's what he said, too.
He didn't play in that one, obviously, but even the rest of the team said that.
But
they
he
got
said
out
the team
system.
Got away from it, too. And yeah, as what we've come together with the system is, you know, a commitment to playing, you know, on the perimeter and being more free-flowing in that sense. And I think, so what he was before in the other games, he was saying, we posted up too much, posted me up too much. I relied on that too much against Philadelphia, particularly. And I thought that was a missed opportunity in Memphis, particularly when Valanciunas was off the floor. I mean, he had Bruno Caboclo on him a lot.
Yeah.
And I guess I would need to pull it up, but to my memory, I don't think there were many post-ups at all there. And that remains a valuable way, not only, you know, to get him going, but to just get buckets for this team. And that's going to be something that they're going to have to kind of negotiate over the course of the entire season. But it has to be both.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it has to be 50-50 or anything like that. But you need to, when you have that advantage, you know, take advantage of it. And it worked really well to have him on the perimeter when Valanciunas was on him, because now you're removing Valanciunas right as a rim defender.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Wiggins and Culver were eaten early.
It opened up things. Yeah, Culver had a really strong start last night. I thought that in the Washington game, I know he had 20 points, but a lot of that came in the second half of the blowout. I thought last night was the most comfortable Culver look.
Easy. That's, to me, I don't know, people were using the term breakout game in Washington, and I would not have used that term.
No, I
for
mean,
me.
Like, he had a nice final stat line, but
yeah,
they were up by,
the
what,
game.
30 points in the second half when he scored 15 of his points.
But this game, if you watch the way he played and you put your own sort of confidence barometer on him, it was the highest it's been, easy.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
It's been for the reason that we all know is he's more comfortable with the ball in his hands. There weren't any point guards. He had to initiate the offense, and it worked. That's what at this juncture he's better at.
Yeah.
And I don't, again, another thing they're going to need to negotiate, because you do need to, and you should run the offense through Teague and Napier when they're healthy, but it's got to be both. I didn't like the polarization of what Culver had been, which was largely living in the corner, operating as a really tertiary kind of option, to, okay, now you're on ball almost exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Again, more balance. And maybe that's something you find over time. I'm sure that's somewhat difficult to manage as a coach, but we know that. We know that Jarrett Culver right now is more comfortable playing that way.
Yeah. I want to get back to Wiggins. We can talk about Towns. We can talk about Culver move in a little bit here. But what do you think Wiggins has done the best so far in this? I don't want to say necessarily new version of him yet, because I think that you have to prove it over a little bit longer period of time than just the 7 games that they've played. But what do you think so far in this short sample size he's done better than he ever has?
Once he starts dribbling, he has like a magnet on his sternum to the rim that connects to the rim. And I mean, he is shooting. He is shooting from the 3-point line, where we're seeing that. But as soon as he starts moving north to south, he's allowing himself to get sucked into the rim and not stopping short for a pull-up shot. And the times when he is stopping short, particularly, again, in these last 2 games, we're seeing that kickback over-the-shoulder pass where he's, you know, finding the popper, finding the kind of mini skip to the corner. Like, that's what it's about for him. You need to be working north to south. And when he does that, and now that he's added a little bit more facilitation to his game, because he just wasn't passing at all at the beginning of the year, when you have that, you have a dynamic offensive creator from the perimeter. And I love to see that in these last couple of games, and I wanted to see it happening more so in wins. But those are the two best individual Andrew Wiggins games I've seen this year.
So the thing I do think is best is, I don't want to say his shot chart, but the fact that he's just not taking those long twos. He's taken 15 shots between 16 feet and the 3-point line this year in 7 games. It's a little over, what, 2 per game? Just a hair over it?
So I was looking at some of that. It's a little bit weird. So Basketball Reference lays that out really simply, where they got the rim 3 to 10 feet, 10 to 16 feet, 16 feet to the 3-point line. And he's kind of taking a lot of shots from that 3 to 10-foot range, but it's really like 4 feet, right?
I think what he's actually impressed me with is that kind of little pull-up floater that's at like 7 or 8 feet.
Sure.
When a team's playing that drop scheme, he comes off a pick and roll action, he's attacking the rim, and he realizes he's not going to get all the way there, and he's been knocking down that somewhat consistently. I know it's not the easiest shot in the world, but he's impressed me with...
He's getting deep enough.
Yeah, he's getting deep enough to where you can do it.
If you're taking that from 9, that's going to be way different than 4.
He's doing it at like 6 or 7, I think, and it's, he's done well at it.
No, I've loved to see it.
I've been impressed by that.
The shot distributions are a little bit, it's just kind of weird. I don't know, just where they're drawing the lines. And I guess NBA.com maybe breaks it down a little bit more. But what you see statistically is now he's shooting 36% of his shots from 3 this year. The volume.
His frequency.
Frequency. And his career average there is 20%. Before this year, that was flipped.
Yeah.
From career average to what he was doing to career averages, which was 20% threes, 35% from his shots coming from the mid range. And yeah, that's going to give you an obvious analytic boost for any player, but particularly with Andrew Wiggins, who is 5 years proof bad at that shot.
Yeah.
Like he's particularly bad at that shot that he was taking 35% of the time, statistically speaking. And he's actually been has the capability to be an above-average 3-point shooter. So you take in this, the normal analytics of 2 versus 3, and you apply it to his skill set, you just have a math equation that equals more efficiency from Andrew Wiggins.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's impressive, or at least hopeful, that not only has his mid-range attempts gone down and his attempts at the rim gone up and behind the arc gone up, that's happened while actually increasing his shots. He's taking more shots this year than he did last year.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's taking over 2 more shots per game this year than he did last year. He's almost at 19 attempts per game. Now,
part do you have his previous years up, like his overall?
I have his overall per. I'm on his basketball reference overview.
So how does it compare to his like second, his early years?
So his first,
is this his highest volume? I guess my question is this his highest volume shooting season of his career?
No, his third year, so 16-17, that would have been the first year of Tibbs, right?
Because it was high volume year one and two.
Year one wasn't as high a volume. Year one, he only took he took just under 14 shots a game. Year two jumped to 16. Year three, it was just over 19. Right now, he's at 18.9.
I guess I could look it up.
But part of that is it's a small sample size, and Carl missed two of those games. So that's part of it. But even before Carl was suspended, he had increased by a little bit. Not by this much, but it was a little bit higher. And the mid-range has gone down. Both shots at the rim and behind the arc have gone up. And those are... That's a great equation for him.
Yeah, and you know what? For me, particularly because it's only been seven games, this is a time where we can note the stats of that, but it also looks more fluid and more comfortable and more dynamic to defend.
Mm-hmm.
The way he's getting those shots, like if it's one thing to shoot from the higher percentage spots, there's also a way to apply more pressure by shooting from the more dynamic spots on the floor, and I think he's doing that. And so, yeah, we can get to a point 20-25 games in the year and say, is this really a truly meaningful shot selection difference? Like, I think yes, we will get there, but for now, on a game to game basis, I'm like, yeah, that seems like a guy we should be giving the ball to in a decently high volume because it has been the best perimeter creation option on this team. Partially, that's because they don't have a lot of other options there.
Sure.
Teague's given a little bit.
He's been up and down.
Culver hasn't given them much in the aggregate. And then Covington, I think you don't want him to be going north. You don't want him to be
He's
like...
He's not a creator.
You don't want him to be breaking guys down.
Yes.
Like, he's literally the guy that as soon as he makes a crossover and he's going right to left or something like that, then I start getting concerned.
Yeah.
But if he can just be... head down, like just a hesitation, I'm going right, just hesitation, I'm going left, like just get the guy to lean a little bit and take advantage of that. Like I like that from Covington, but when you're talking about the guy that you want to break someone down off the dribble, Andrew Wiggins is the best option that this team has.
Yeah,
like I'd like to see Culver get there. I think he could get up into that area, but right now it's not close.
How do you think that Andrew's been defensively so far?
People are really into the deflections and stuff. Those have always struck me as a somewhat arbitrary stat.
Yeah, I don't know that I like that because a lot of it is...
I mean, it beats the alternative of not deflecting it.
Sure, but a lot of it is gambling. Should you be gambling at that point? Like a lot goes into that. I don't think that the number of deflections tells the whole story.
He's, what it does tell you is his hands are not at his hip. And
that's
that was
true.
A thing in the past. So I like it. I'm not giving him any sort of like A-plus defensively on this year.
He's
as
not
far
making
as like,
the all defense team?
No, but even just being like a... quite frankly, I would need to like go back and watch a little bit more to decide if I think he's been a truly positive defensive player for this team. Because I think a lot of what's done him in is... It isn't the lack of deflection, or it isn't the not being in a defensive stance. It's not understanding team concept defense, and particularly in schemes that, as Tibbs always said, rely on playing on a string. Like he stunk at breaking the string, and the scheme this year is fairly similar.
Yeah,
you know, and he needs to be in connection with that. It's been better, but if you put up film of the guys who do that really well in their engagement and being a step ahead on the string, like Andrew is not doing that sort of stuff yet, but be average. That's step one. You know, don't let your breakdown be the one that leads to the wide open corner three. Because
mm-hmm.
I think we did see some of that in actually the Washington game too, but for sure Milwaukee. And maybe that was just a little overwhelmed by Giannis's presence some.
Which I get.
Totally. But I'm more pleased with the offense of Andrew Wiggins, certainly, than the D.
I think everyone's more pleased with the offense, and the defense is always going to be a work in progress for him because he's never been a good defender. Not that he's ever been an overly positive offensive player either. He's got the tools to do it. He just hasn't.
This is, again, somewhat arbitrary too, but the way I talked about Cat last year was I saw him take a defensive step forward and I moved him into like the 40th percentile of defenders at his position.
Yeah.
Not quite average.
But he went from awful to not quite average.
Yeah. I mean, first year of Tibbs, awful, like down towards zero percentile. Yeah. And then, you know, and then he took a step up some and then up to 40. My question is, what has that been for Andrew Wiggins at his position?
Like, where has he started?
Yeah, or where was he last year if you're ranking him amongst wing defenders who are getting 30 minutes a night? Like,
not high.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess what I'm, in my mind, we think about Cat of being this guy who's a below-average defender, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference. If this team is going to make a leap into being, you know, an above-average defensive team, Cat needs to be an above-average defender. We acknowledge that Wiggins is bad, but I think we forget about that could be just as meaningful. If Wiggins goes from a 15th percent defender to a 55th percentile defender.
Well, I mean, look how important perimeter defenders are, too.
I mean, I'll take the backline guys, the most important. But yeah, that's the next thing is being the guy who's playing on a string, or which they're not asking them to do at all, really, is defending the point of attack. But if Wiggins could do that, if he could handle some of that load that, you know, Trevion Graham's kind of taking on, or we see Josh Okogie, I mean, there's not necessarily a need for it, I guess, on the way this roster is constructed, but he is a 6'8 athlete that if you could put him on a ball handler, that would be advantageous, because I think a lot of their biggest defensive weaknesses this year have been not on the back line. Kat and Vonleh, I think, have been doing a good job. I think the scheme works.
I've actually been really surprised with Noah Vonleh for the most part.
Yeah.
He's kind of blown me away with him, actually. I did not have high expectations for him, especially for sure. After watching the preseason. I thought this is going to be a disaster.
But wouldn't you say
I've been impressed.
It's the controlling the dribblers.
Yeah.
That's
where they struggle. And I think that
Kyrie 50, right? Like, there's been a handful of those.
How much of that do you think leads into because of them playing Covington at the four? Because we haven't seen Covington taking the offensive initiator, whatever you want to call it, nearly as often as we had.
That is
the
negative opportunity cost of playing Robert Covington at the power forward. Is
you can't slide everyone else up.
No, you can't. You can't rebound. And we've asked Ryan that, mm-hmm. and he goes, "Yes, have I been tempted to put him on Kyrie or Bradley Beal or Giannis?" Yes, there's the temptation there, but what Ryan has said is it sacrifices rebounding by taking Covington out of there, because now you're sliding down to asking 6'4", 6'5", Trevion Graham to be a rebounder, or even, you know, even a layman or a Kogi or something like that. Like, they are embracing the importance of defensive rebounding over Covington defending the point of attack.
And their defensive rebounding rates have been good for the most part. They've done a solid job of not allowing offensive boards.
And to their credit, that's important. And they've been bad at it. They've been bottom five in that every year of Cat's career.
I think, and I checked before yesterday's game. I don't know what it is right now after yesterday, but they were in the top 10 in all those categories in terms of getting defensive rebounds, stuff like that. They were top 10 for all that.
And I'm sure that is a question that they're weighing in the coach's room is, okay, is that more important than being able to control the guy at the point of attack?
Yeah.
And what they've came to is clearly no. The answer being no, because they figure they have Trevion Graham who could do that. Well, I think Trevion's good at that. Josh Okogie is another option there. But Robert Covington has shown to be elite.
Yeah.
At that element
He's
of
like
defense.
90th percentile.
Exactly. Right. So it's just, for me, who as I'm on my little high hill of thinking they should be playing two bigs, it's just like kindling to that fire where I go, well, yeah, if you just played Noah Vonleh next to Cat, then you could put Covington out on the perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what I believe leads to more winning for this team, or an element that would lead to it. I just think the positive externalities of that outweigh, you know, the downsides. But it is. I mean, that is something that's costing them.
Yeah.
I don't know how to quantify it exactly, But we did see, I thought that was interesting last night. We saw two bigs play together. Mm-hmm. Like, no foul trouble, no nothing. Like, they played Vonleh and Cat together for somewhat of an extended period of time. And I'm curious of not only Culver playing point guard, is that going to be something that was informed simply by Teague and Napier being out, or is that going to be something that continues on, or are they going to play two bigs together, or is that also just informed by being shorthanded last night?
Well, let's get to the Culver thing, because last night was the best he's looked. I don't think it's necessarily been close. He's had moments where he's looked okay, but for the most part, I think he's looked a little overwhelmed as a rookie. But last night he looked like, and I think a lot of this has to do with the ball being in his hands, he looked like he was in control of himself and the game for the first time.
Doesn't take a basketball PhD to know that that basketball player currently is best at offensive basketball when he is initiating the offense. Simple. And again, what I'm sure they're weighing is, well, it eventually we want him to be able to be both, and we like him in an off-ball role currently. But again, right? Are you prioritizing the long run or the now?
Yeah.
And I get embracing the blueprint of the system, big picture.
Which they've said they're going to do. This is system over the pieces
personnel.
Right now.
Yep. Yeah. That's what they've said that numerous times. I'm just saying you can get a little bit over the top with that.
Yeah.
I don't think it devastates the blueprint to play 6 minutes a game with two bigs together on the floor. I don't think it devastates the blueprint to make Jarrett Culver be the point guard. I think you can have both. And I think they will. Because as much as you want to embrace a system over personnel, at some point during the rigors of the NBA season, it's going to be about wins and losses. Mm-hmm. And if you determine that these elements will improve your winning percentage by X amount, I think you have to consider that. I think they will consider that. I think they already are considered. They played Culver and they played Vonleh last night. So it's something worth monitoring and just to me worth trying. And if it doesn't prove to be advantageous, I think you can go away from it. But small dabs of it, I'd like to see.
I'd like to see more of Culver at the point guard position. I know you're more of you want to see two bigs on the floor and. I would like
I'm
to see him
like
spurts.
5 or 6 minutes.
Sure, yeah, but I don't necessarily need to see that all the time.
That's fair.
It is what it is. I would like to see Culver in the position he was in last night, because I think that while it is system over players right now and all that, I think that by what you had to give up to go get Jarrett Culver, you've also made the statement that he is one
a
of
big
the
part of
yes
the,
he is an ingredient yeah. to this system. At some point where Noah Vonleh is on a one-year deal in whatever,
totally fair.
Don't know that he's part of that future there. So that's why I'd like to see them try and put him in the best position for him to be personally successful.
No,
I think that matters for the future of him and for the future of the team.
I do agree with that, because where Jarrett Culver can play will inform the long-term blueprint.
Yes.
A year from now, 2 years from now, is he more of a traditional wing, or is he more of like a Caris LeVert, like a 1.5, you know? And my pushback would be, too, is that, yes, Noah Vonleh and Jordan Bell probably aren't here, whatever, Gorgui Dieng for the long term, but Cat is, and the question of Cat being the one big is one that will not go away 2 years from now.
Yeah.
There will be a new Noah Vonleh, and there will be a... I just think there's an argument to be made that having Cat be essentially your four can work too.
Yeah.
And maybe even better. I would be frustrated to see 82 games of not really testing the water on that, because I do think it's not just that I'm like, I love Noah Vonleh and I think he should be this
president of the fan club.
Yeah, right. Hey, I am. I'm pro Noah Vonleh. I like it. He's kind of fallen in love with that like little running hook shot sort of thing. I'm like, dude, you're like 260 pounds. Like,
yeah, you're a thick man.
His arms are bigger than some dude's legs. Like, I want to. Yeah, but I don't know. It's the idea of the blueprint and the effectiveness again are just things that matter, because that's not going away.
Yeah. All right, so tomorrow night the Warriors are in town, and this is the biggest thing this entire offseason involved, the Warriors. The Wolves made a trade with the Warriors. The biggest thing was obviously Trayvon Graham and Shabazz Napier being traded here by the Warriors. But D'Angelo Russell is going to be in town. Whether he plays or not, we don't know. He's dealing with an ankle injury, and the Warriors have shifted to not exactly trying to win basketball games this year, which how the mighty have fallen, I guess.
It's crazy, dude.
Isn't it wild just how quick it goes? And the NBA is going to... I think a lot of teams across the league want them to pay for it, too. I think there's not going to be much mercy given to that team when they don't have it, when Kai Bowman doesn't have it going on certain nights. They're going to be in trouble because
most
a lot
nights,
of teams
Kai
are,
Bowman will not have it going
yes,
on.
Yes, and neither will Jordan Poole or Eric Pascal or Willie Cauley-Stein or the rest of their starting. It is unbelievable what their starting five has looked like compared
to
what
totally
it was a year ago.
I totally underestimated that. I totally underestimated it. I was thinking that they would get more from guys like Alec Burks and Glenn Robinson, who had been around.
And Burks has been hurt, I think. Yeah. But I think Robinson's a kind of a fringe NBA player.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with their roster.
I thought the Warriors special sauce would,
and
would
I get
bring
that.
Out more from guys like that.
I get that. I truly do understand that. I don't know that these guys are NBA players. Because I think a lot of the Warriors special sauce has been, the Warriors special sauce has made Andre Iguodala like have a career revival. And same with Sean Livingston. But those dudes were NBA players.
Yeah. No, that's true.
It's kind of like why the Suns have looked so good, and I don't know that the Suns thing's going to last, but the bottom of the Suns roster, instead of it being like Dragan Bender, who's not an NBA player, it's Aaron Baines, who is an NBA player. That's the biggest difference, I think, with them and even with the Warriors struggling now. But D'Angelo Russell is going to be in town.
Yes.
We don't know that he's going to play. He's been dealing with an ankle injury. And this means that Wolves fans and Twitter, the topic of conversation tomorrow, and as you said before we started recording, is when are they going to start having discussion about D'Angelo Russell again? I know that a trade can't happen now. I don't know if he's a December 15th guy or January
15th guy. December 15th.
December?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's December or January for him. Is that something that you think we're going to hear more of again?
Well, from... Yeah.
Like real noise, not just from Twitter, not just from... Like real noise.
Yes, we will hear real noise because we don't know to what degree it's actually meaningful, but if the Warriors do deem that it starts to make sense to look for a bigger a package for him for Russell, then the Wolves will poke their nose into it and will consider it. My frustration with the topic comes from the idea that some people seem to think that it's free agency again.
It's not.
And that you can just sign him and put him on the Timberwolves and be like, well, he's better than Jeff Teague. Like, no, of course he's better than Jeff Teague. Like, I'm not saying that. Again, we need to weigh what is going out to make this happen. And it's so important to remember in the offseason what the cost of D'Angelo Russell was for any team to acquire him. And to use Golden State as an example, they not only had to send a first-round pick to Brooklyn. That's one. Well, kind of.
It's going to be a 2026 second round.
Well,
pick
now, yes. They had to send out draft capital.
Yes.
To Brooklyn that had the potential of being a first round pick. It did have potential for it. So it's called a half or whatever.
Sure.
And then you also had to get off of money to be able to create the space for Russell to come. So they sent a second first round pick to Memphis. For Memphis to take on Andre Iguodala. So for the Timberwolves, if they were to have gotten D'Angelo Russell, the cost would have been the same. They would have had to send out a half of a first round pick to Brooklyn for facilitating the sign and trade.
Yep.
And then they would have had to send probably Jeff Teague as their Andre Iguodala and a first round pick there. Is that worth D'Angelo Russell? Maybe, but you also then need to factor in that D'Angelo Russell is now on a maximum contract, that he's going to be making $27, $29, $30, and $31 million in the next 4 years. D'Angelo Russell is not certainly a player that is quote-unquote worth that.
No.
So it's not just about having D'Angelo Russell. It's about factoring in that paying that much for him in literal dollars and assets is something you need to consider versus acquiring someone else. You're going to always need to pay for the someone else.
Yeah.
But that player, that someone else, could very well be someone better than D'Angelo Russell. And I think that should cause some pause in the, like, it doesn't, it's not D'Angelo Russell or bust. It just isn't.
No. And I'm I was on board the D'Angelo Russell train this summer, I think. Like, I thought it would have been a good idea.
Sure.
But now I'm, especially after seeing the
contract. We didn't think it was going to be that much draft capital going out.
No, I agree. I don't know that I would want to trade for him now. I don't know that he's worth it. Not only because of what you would have to give up, but what you're going to have to pay him. And I don't know that he's the type of guy that can be a number two on a championship level team. I don't know that he's that.
Last year, D'Angelo Russell was not that great.
He was their second best player. In Brooklyn.
If you watched D'Angelo Russell last year, he was a good player. He was a Eastern Conference, which deserves an asterisk. And then he was an Eastern Conference replacement All-Star. That's two asterisks on that.
He was the last guy to make the JV All-Star team.
Exactly. So he's not a bad player.
No.
It's just you're not... It's not Devin Booker. It's not CJ McCollum. It's not, I mean, or if you want to jump up like another level into more like star. It's not. He's a level below that. And you then need to ask, yeah, is he a number two? What is the ceiling of Cat and D'Angelo Russell as your one and two team?
Second round of the playoffs?
Because you also have Andrew Wiggins here. So now you're going max on Cat, Wiggins, and Russell?
And that's your core. That's what you've got.
And then people say, oh, it's just to get dump Wiggins. Good luck. I mean, then you're talking about more draft capital going out.
Unless he keeps this up. If he keeps this up, I think that conversation might change.
How much? It's
the whole year. He's not. I don't think you can move him this year. It has to be a whole year of this.
Even if he was quote-unquote worth the money that he's making, Andrew Wiggins. It still requires a team having the cap flexibility to take that on.
Well, if he was worth the money he was making, you wouldn't have a problem.
No, you would. That's my point, is you would have a problem because teams need to have...
he'd be good, and you'd be fine, and you'd be winning.
They would need to have the space to take that in, though. I'm just saying
you wouldn't want to trade him. If he was worth that money, you wouldn't want to trade him.
Yeah.
That's so they wouldn't have a problem. They'd be great.
It's just frustrating because there's so many more layers to it than the fact that Kat and Russell are alleged buddies.
There are more layers than a Slam magazine feature.
Yeah. There certainly is. And
them and Devin Booker are going to all play together.
Yeah, no, they're not. I mean, maybe when they'll play together in the sense that we thought Chris Paul, Carmelo, and LeBron would play together.
Yeah, which they could go on the banana boat tour.
Yeah, that tour never took off. It stayed on the shore. That never happened. You know, like
it's because only one of them's been chasing tight. Well, I mean, Chris Paul was too, but he was a secondary piece.
I don't know. The other part of it is, you know, as I set my obvious opinion aside on the situation, D'Angelo Russell is only 23 years old.
Yeah,
and as we should with most players, factor in growth. There is a potential that he ends up being a player that you see is certainly worth that money.
And I think guards are a little slower to develop in terms of getting to stardom. It's a tough place to become really, really good. And even he's been a case of that. His first few years in the league, he was just a good basketball player.
What about 12 months ago? About 12 months ago? Seven games into the 2018-19 season, if you would have told me that D'Angelo Russell was going to get a max contract the next year, I would have said you're high.
If you would have told me he was going to make the All-Star team that year.
A double asterisk All-Star game. I still would have
doesn't
said,
matter. Yeah. It does not matter. If you would have told me that he was going to be in Charlotte for the All-Star game, like, who's he hanging out with? That would have been my question.
Cat.
Yes.
He's just in his posse.
But then,
I mean,
Caris LeVert got hurt, and he became the best player on that team.
And more credit to him. Yeah. For that. Like,
oh, absolutely. I'm not trying to take anything away from D'Angelo Russell. I just don't think he's a max contract guy.
I'm just trying to apply some reality to what he is actually as a player, which is certainly someone who has flaws, particularly on the defensive end. Like, great, maybe Kat's jumped up to a 55th percentile center, but we just talked about how we're not sure where Wiggins is at, and I'm pretty dang sure I know where D'Angelo Russell is at, and that's also below the line of defense. Like, I don't know. David Vanderpool can be a wizard, but if your three best players are D'Angelo Russell, Wiggins, and Kat, that's tough to swallow. Not even to mention, we haven't even brought up Robert Covington. Robert Covington's probably going to to Golden State in that trade.
Yeah, that is the trade. Well, I mean, there's more to it, obviously, because money doesn't match. But that is the crux of the trade. He's the centerpiece.
Let's do it. Let's talk about what an actual package could look like. Covington makes 30. You're going to need to make money match.
Yes.
And Russell makes 27.3.
Covington is at what, 13?
13 about. So now you need to. You also are going to need to attach Teague or Jang to it.
Mm-hmm.
Teague, I think you could probably get away with from not attaching much else on that. It's expiring.
I would bet they would go Teague because it's expiring, and that's what the Warriors would want to try and open up some semblance of flexibility in the future.
Okay.
If they're doing this.
All right. So we'll say Teague's the most likely piece to attach on with. So that's $32 million. You know what the Warriors can't do? Take back more money in a trade.
Yeah, because
they're literally hard capped. So now they have to send out $5 million back to the Wolves amount. You know what they don't have?
$5 million contracts.
They don't have that. So then you end up stacking up a big pile of Willie Cauley-Steins, Jordan Pools, Jacob Evans, and Amari Spum. It
doesn't work.
It would be very complicated to make work in that way. It's not to say we've seen the wizardry of teams being able to do that, and Sasha and Gupta specifically be able to do that. But you're going to need to incorporate a third team,
yeah,
most likely, and pay probably compensation for having them, you know, accept that. And there's a dang good argument that Robert Covington should be a piece of this puzzle.
I think he should be.
I mean, I'm not saying it's stupid to consider trading Robert Covington in a package like this. I just think if you are going to trade Robert Covington, I want the return to be a player that's better than D'Angelo Russell.
And I completely understand that. And even from a Warrior sense, I don't think it makes sense for them to trade D'Angelo Russell this year.
Sure.
I think it makes no sense for them to sign this guy to a max, which I understand they did it because they didn't want KD to leave and just get nothing in return. Mm-hmm. I understand why they said, you know what, this one of the best three players in the NBA is leaving. We're not letting him leave for nothing. We're going to go sign this guy to make ourselves feel better about it. I understand that. But you can't deal him before you ever see him play a minute on the same floor as Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson. I don't care what they look like next year because it will be different. I don't know what Klay's going to look like. Steph's going to be another year older. Draymond's going to have even more miles on his body. But you can't blow that up before you even give it a shot, I don't think. I think it'd be dumb for them to trade him unless they get blown away by a return.
Well, I was going
to
say, there's situations where I would, and maybe Robert Covington would be one of those situations that I would, because I don't mind the next year if I'm the Warriors and I'm rolling out Draymond, Covington, Steph, Klay, like, that's pretty nice. Plus bringing in Cole Anthony or something from the lottery, like, they're going to...
Look at you knowing a college basketball player.
I think I disagree with you. If I am the Golden State, I was of that mindset that you are a couple weeks ago before everything went to crap.
Before they were going to be
whatever
the bottom five of the league.
I think if I am Golden State, I'm actively looking for things. I mean, provided it brings back as much or more value than D'Angelo Russell
does. I think they'd have to be blown away to do it. If I were sitting in that front office, I'd be against at least seeing it through. Because even if you watch it next year and it looks okay, you can say, okay, I think we're ready to move on from him. And you still have that asset. And even if he plays well this year, especially without Steph, teams will know, will remember that. Say, you know what? Okay, maybe he doesn't look that good right now, but look who he's sharing the floor with and look what he's done when he's been able to run the show himself. And teams aren't going to forget that.
What? Okay. But if, and actually we're saying Covington's number wrong, it's 11.3.
Oh,
but oops. It gets up to 13. At some point, though, so I think they basically could make it work if they did Russell and Looney.
Yeah, because then
Russell and Looney for Teague and
they're at 30. It's 30.3 would be going in into Golden State.
Okay, and yeah, so then you're good. You're good because then that's 31.7. So they under the cap they can make that work. You wouldn't do that if you're Golden State. Say Teague and Covington for Looney and Russell. I'd do that in a second if I'm going to.
I don't think they would do it. I think they like Looney, too.
Would you do it? I'm saying.
Not right now, no. I would wait to see.
Because you think that D'Angelo Russell can be a really valuable piece once that team's
all
put back
together. I
think
they have to see what it looks like. I'm of that mindset where they have to see what it looks like. And I think they would have to be blown away with the return. I don't think Robert Covington, while he's an awesome complimentary piece, and I do think would fit in good there, Robert Covington's not. If you want to trade him for Robert Covington next year, it's probably going to be available if you're Golden State. Robert Covington's not going to be off the table if the Wolves really have their eyes set on D'Angelo Russell a year from now.
Okay. I hear what you're saying. There is just the element of they might not be able to wait. Like, they might need to project that. Guess how good it is together. Obviously, it'd be better if you could see it on the floor.
Sure.
But Covington's, feather in his cap shrinks every year that goes off of that contract and that he gets older.
Yeah.
So if we're just talking about value for value, like, I don't know. I think they have to consider that. And even if it's not Covington, if it's somebody else from some other team, a similar sort of package, like, would it be better if they knew, if they'd seen it? Oh, we tested 50 games of Clay, Steph, Draymond, and Russell. Sure. That would be better. But sometimes the market is best.
Sure.
In the moment.
And I get that. And I think I would be of the mindset to wait if I were them.
I don't know if they're going to do it or not. It's hard. I could.
They need somebody to do something this year just to get through the season.
Yeah. New arena and everything. I don't know how important all that stuff is. It's important to some degree.
I know that. They didn't plan on starting the starting five in the Chase Center that they've been starting lately.
I mean,
I know that wasn't the plan when they built that building, Dane.
It's unbelievably bad.
It's appalling what their starting lineup was like last week compared to a year ago last week.
It's like their G League team.
It was before Boogie Cousins was back from injury.
Yeah. They are in such a unique situation. I mean, nothing like that has happened before. I mean, people want to make the Spurs and the Tim Duncan sort of comparison, but what this Golden State team, if for some reason, like, Draymond and Russell miss a lot of games this year. I mean, we're talking about like a Bobcats bad team.
Oh, yeah. Like 7 wins. Here's the thing that I don't agree with the Spurs comparison is there's no like Tim Duncan was probably the greatest power forward of all time. There's not that in this draft, I don't think. Like there's no LeBron coming in this draft where Tim Duncan was the surefire number one guy that there was no doubt about.
I was like 7 when that was. Sure. Do we know that? Did we know that?
I think that was
October
from what I've
1996.
And they didn't do it on purpose. Like, although towards the end, I do think they did. Yeah. But like, they didn't plan on just being terrible that year for Tim Duncan. It happened, and then they kind of leaned into it. But I'm of the mindset that they understood how good Tim Duncan was. Like, if you read history about it. Like,
sure, maybe. I mean,
they understood that Tim Duncan was going to be special. While, like, yeah, some of these guys like LaMelo Ball and Cole Anthony might look like they're good. We don't know. There's not someone in this draft even that we thought of last year. Like, Zion Williamson's going to come in, and if he's healthy,
I disagree. To take that example, Zion wasn't the number one guy. Zion wasn't even... he was like a top 5 pick at the time. Like, things transpire in college. They're 19-year-olds. Like, yeah. Over the course of the year, like, a Tim Duncan or a Zion, or 90% of that could.
After like 2 games, Zion was the number one guy. After we watched Zion's debut against, I want to say Kentucky, when they just shelled Kentucky and Zion was far and away the best player on the floor. I think it was at that point. Everyone's like, Zion Williamson is
going number one. And it's because
R.J.
Barrett was a very good prospect coming out.
Dominated the country of Canada as a high school kid.
What I'm pushing back on the notion of is that we know what a draft is. In October. I don't even think we know where the quality of a draft is until a couple years after those guys have been in the league.
No, normally, yes, and I agree, but there's not someone right now, like in the Anthony Davis year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Bobcats won 7 games because they wanted Anthony Davis.
You're right. I totally get what you're saying, and the people who know way more than I do about the draft are saying those things as well. I just think the nature of that is those guys are weathermen.
Yeah, and I'm not claiming to be a draft expert. Yeah. I am conveying what I've read about the draft because I don't watch college basketball. I'm just conveying the other people's opinions that I am taking as my own.
You are right to point out that this is not apples to apples with the Duncan year.
Yeah.
It's fruit, though. So, I mean, well, yeah, I guess we'll see, and I'm sure it's the conversations. It's the conversations that Golden State is having, which by proximity involves the Wolves in a weird sort of way, because this D'Angelo Russell thing, while I think is somewhat overblown, it's not impossible. D'Angelo Russell could be on the Wolves in 5 weeks, 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Like that is certainly possible. I mean, we're pointing out how it's tough, but it's
not impossible.
And we don't know. We're not in Gerson Rose's head knowing what he thinks of D'Angelo Russell. This is just my opinion of D'Angelo Russell. I fall lower on the gradient of it, but well, I mean, Rose's knows way more than I do, and they may see D'Angelo Russell as a transcendent all-star.
I'm guessing they have a high opinion of him. If they tried to get him this summer, knowing what it would take to get it done, I'm guessing they have a pretty high opinion.
Well, that's why I don't think they knew what it would take to get it done. I don't think they knew that he was going to be a max player, one. And two, I think they definitely didn't expect the draft capital to be going out as it did. I think they were doing their due diligence and sniffing around. And we saw them sniffing around and we blew that up.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened. And that's what I understand it to be. They did not have a trade completely lined up. If the pieces fell in place where, you know, D'Lo is looking to sign like a 4-year, $85 million contract rather than a 4-year, $20 million.
Like the Malcolm Brogdon deal.
Yeah, if he's that, they go, okay, now that's something we could get on board with, and we have to pay one first to do it. Like,
it's worth it.
That's what I think. That's what they were lusting over. Yeah. I don't think it was just D'Angelo Russell. Period. And unfortunately or fortunately, that's the context that is necessary if you want to have an actual D'Angelo Russell conversation.
Yeah. Anything else you want to get off your chest today, Dane?
I think the Wolves are going to beat Denver on Sunday.
Interesting.
Yeah. I really feel
Denver's not looked great so far.
I watched them play last night. So I was determining between, should I watch Golden, because they're playing Golden State and Denver, you know, the next two games. And I like to watch teams before they play. I'm like, I can't watch Golden State again. So I watched.
Once is enough.
Yeah. I was like, and I mean, I know we're probably trying to wrap up here a little bit, but I'm just sitting there watching the game, and I'm lower on Denver than most people are, and it's particularly as you juxtapose it against the Wolves, it's Kat Jokic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I don't know, close to a push, right?
I think Kat's been better so far. I mean,
sure, I would probably, whatever.
It's hard because it's been so short of a season so far, and Carl missed two games. And
yes.
Like, I'm a little jaded by the first two games where he was the best player in the league, basically.
For sure. But my broader point is the rest of the roster. And Denver had an awesome year last year, and they got so much out of those guys. And I think it was a great system, great coaching. They put that all together. But if we delete Kat and Jokic from those rosters, I don't think Denver is twice as good as the Wolves are with everyone else. Like, I think particularly this Wiggins, which I'm not banking on being true, there's not necessarily a massive, massive gap between this Wiggins and what Jamal Murray is. Murray is not a beacon of efficiency.
Sure.
In his own right. And then we go down, you kind of have your veteran defensive power forward piece, Paul Millsap versus Robert Covington. I'm taking Covington in that.
Like, it's still funny to hear Covington referred to as a power forward.
Totally. But, well, yeah, you know, that's how I feel about it.
I know.
But then the rest is better on Denver. Like, they have better versions of Jake Layman and like, they have their Josh Okogie and Torrey Craig, and they have their Jarrett Culver and Michael Porter Jr., whatever. Like, they have all those other things. I just don't think that the top of these two teams' rosters are that disproportionately tilted towards Denver being better. And I think we're caught up in how good Denver was last season.
The depth is just better there.
They
have more people that you can count on. I think they have more guys that can shoot.
It's a home game for the Wolves. What Kat does to this, what Kat, when he's played well this year, does to this, not just his own production in and of himself, but what he brings to the rest of this team, to the Andrew Wigginses, to the Jarrett Culvers, who want to penetrate. It's easy money.
Yeah.
One-on-one. Get by your guy. Get to the bucket. There is not rim defenders there anymore because Kat is out on the perimeter. And if Kat is playing defense like this, like, this Wolves team is not bad.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I think I'm not saying I'm betting my life on it, but I think most people anticipate the Wolves are going to take care of business against Golden State, and then they'll probably lose to Denver because they'll put Denver in the same bin as Philly and Milwaukee, and they're not in my book.
No, I don't think Denver's that good of a team. I don't think Denver's necessarily a title contender. I think they're locked to make the playoffs in the West, but I don't view them as a team that when I close my eyes and picture a team raising the Larry O'Brien Trophy, I don't see Jokic.
No, you know what I picture is the
there.
Team that was getting busted up by the Spurs mm-hmm. in the playoffs, and they went out to win that, but like it's they're a good team. They're sure. a good team. I think at home and with what Cat can be, this Wolves team is able to beat them.
That's fair. And I don't disagree at all. I mean, they should have won last year. If I think it was Andrew Wiggins kind of fell asleep on that baseball pass Jokic threw.
Oh, God, yeah.
It was a beautiful pass, though.
We're not far removed from the Wolves and the Nuggets being in the exact same spot playing in game 82.
Yeah.
For that thing. And what the Nuggets have done better than anything else is put in a coaching staff and a system that highlights that group. And what are the Timberwolves trying to at least do this year?
The Nuggets were further ahead in terms of that being the philosophy. They got that right before the Wolves got this right.
Totally.
That's the biggest difference. Well, that's the difference, and the depth. Yeah.
And the depth. You're right. And Murray is better than Wiggins.
Yes.
But it's just, I don't know. I think the public perception is that there's this massive gap between Denver and Minnesota. I think the Wolves are way, way behind the LA teams, Utah, a lot of the other teams in the West. Denver, not so much. I like the way the Wolves match up with them.
I would like to see more Michael Porter Jr. on the floor for them.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to see what he can do. It's so fascinating because he's a mystery.
He really is. And maybe that's a little unfair to pair him up with Culver. But you know what I'm saying. If we just go down the rest of it, it's not like Denver is this super special just from the talent they have on the roster.
I don't think that they're a title contender right now.
Yeah.
I don't put them in that same basket as the LA teams, as Utah, right. And I don't view them that way. Certainly not Philly, not Milwaukee either. So.
And I mean, who knows? I'm willing to be proven wrong. I thought they would beat up Memphis yesterday. I was wrong about that.
I thought that too.
So like,
but I think a lot of that was the backcourt just looked so different, and it was a tough night for them.
Yeah, it's just kind of weird. Like, you're basically playing with your backup quarterback, right?
Yeah.
That's the analogy I was using. Like,
third string. I mean, both their quarterbacks were.
Sure.
Both quarterbacks were.
I think some people are like, it's kind of like, to use a football analogy, like, okay, Jeff Teague's out. Great. That's like Andy Dalton going to the bench this week and bringing in whoever this new guy is.
Ryan
like,
Lindley.
Yeah, there you go. Like, I think that's what people think. But one, I think Jeff Teague's better than Andy Dalton. And two, it's just always harder to play with your backup.
Yeah.
Particularly as the guy who's initiating, you know, the offense. So.
Yeah, certainly agree there. But that's Dane Moore. Find him on Twitter at Dane Moore NBA. I'm Danny Cunningham. Find me on Twitter at RealDCunningham. You can find the podcast on the all-new Score North mobile app available for Apple and Android devices, or you can find it on the Apple Podcasts or Spotify app. Check us out there. Leave us a 5-star review. Really appreciate it, and we will talk to you next time.